Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. We have a listener of the week, Rusty Stahl in Beacon, New York. On LinkedIn, Rusty asked me for an old, very old show going back to 2010, the year we started the show. And we had some comments back and forth. And in one of his comments, he said that he loves that I do nonprofit radio for the other 95%. And he had other all caps. Obviously, avid listener, says the tagline of the show correctly in print. And also that nonprofit radio had inspired his own podcast, Fund the People. So we have spinoffs, we've got loyal listeners, and one of those loyal listeners is our listener of the week. Thank you very much, Rusty. I'm glad that the show really inspired you to launch your own podcast, and that I'm glad I helped you out some time ago. Our listener of the week, Rusty Stahl. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd get slapped with a diagnosis of bronchocandidiasis if I had to breathe in the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, with what's going on.
Hey, Rusty. And Tony. This week it's what we can learn from for-profits. Let's not fawn over for-profit companies. Not everything they do carries over to our nonprofit community, but some things do, like building systems and processes, diversifying revenue, knowing KPIs cold, relentless customer focus, and more. Plus, let's look at what nonprofits do better. Stephen Halasnik walks us through the best of both. He's co-founder of Financing Solutions. On Tony's Take Two.
Hails from the gym, the Halloween parade.
Here is what we can learn from for-profits.
It's a pleasure to welcome Stephen Halasnik to Nonprofit Radio. Stephen is co-founder of Financing Solutions, the largest provider of lines of credit for small nonprofits. He has built 7 successful businesses over the past 30 years, and 2 of the companies made the Inc. 500 fastest growing list. The company is at financingsolutionsnow.com, and Stephen says he's not very active on social media. Stephen, welcome to Nonprofit Radio.
Tony, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, thank you very much. You have some interesting ideas about what we on the nonprofit side can learn from our comrades over on the for-profit business side. But first, I want to explore your Jersey roots. It looks like you're a New Jersey boy.
I am. I live in, and I love saying it because, you know, the connotation for New Jersey is that it's ugly, and it's anybody who's been to a lot of New Jersey knows that's not true. I live in the lake and mountain region of New Jersey, which people are always shocked to know that there's a lake and mountain. There's lakes and mountains. Yeah. And so it's a beautiful area. I live about 50 minutes outside New York, and I've traveled the world. And I tell you, it's the area I live is special. And so I'm proud of it.
Wonderful. I saw your town. We can shout the town, Boonton.
That's where my offices are. Yes. And,
oh, okay.
And yeah, so I live 15 minutes away. I think I'm even a little more rural than Boonton, but Boonton is an interesting town.
Mountains and lakes.
It's mountain lakes. Yep. Yep.
And I saw that you went to Rutgers also. So between the two, I thought Jersey boy. Yeah, I grew up in Bergen County in the northeast corner of the state in a little town called Old Tappan.
Oh, sure. Beautiful. I went to a 1776 house there.
Oh, yeah. The 76 house. Yeah. That, okay. You were 5 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
The 76 house I used to go there with my parents. That's yep. That's actually in Tapan, New York.
That's right. It's right next
it's
door.
It's right over the border. It's, it's a 5-minute drive.
Yep.
My parents used to go for Sunday brunch so often that I could tell you where the Eggs Benedict was located.
Yep. And I had, and funny Eggs Benedict, because that's where that's where Benedict Arnold was put in prison.
That's right. That, yep. And then he was hanged up on, Colonel Andre. Yeah, Andre. Up on Andre Hill. Mm-hmm. They walked him from the courthouse at the 76 house to the hill, and there's a monument there where he was hanged.
Yep. Yep. So it's really old building. It's beautiful. I had my rehearsal, my wedding rehearsal dinner there. So.
Oh, wonderful. Well, where'd you get married then?
Well, a chart house in on the Hudson.
The one in Weehawken?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. But you had the rehearsal. Why? Who was so close to?
We were living in Nyack.
Oh, Nyack, New York. Okay. Also Rockland County. Okay. You were living close to the 76 house.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there probably dozens of times with my parents through the through the years.
It's a beautiful, it's a cool place.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic. So welcome. Another level. Yet another level we can learn. We can share. All right. So learning from for-profit businesses, I'm all in favor of. I don't get that many pitches like this, but I like them when they come. So that's what attracted me to your pitch to come on the show. Why don't you acquaint folks with, since you do work for, your company is around nonprofits, acquaint us with financing solutions.
So for the last 12 years, we've been the largest provider of lines of credit to small nonprofits in the United States. Anybody who's ever tried to get a line of credit from a commercial bank knows that it's almost impossible. Typically, a bank's going to want personal guarantees. They're going to want collateral. It's a very laborious process. And to be quite honest with you, banks don't want to work with nonprofits. There's too many concerns they have in regards to if they have to declare default and the press, the PR behind it. So especially for small nonprofits, we have that niche for ourselves. We're one of the only companies that really kind of does it. We are providing, we use our own money. So that's the reason why there's no PGs, personal guarantees, there's no collateral. It's the best way to use this product is if you have uneven cash flow.
Yeah.
And you know, if you know the money's coming in, it's a good, and what's really interesting is we're actually a little slow right now. And you would think that would be the opposite. And it tends, and the reason being is that nonprofits tend to be very responsible. And if they know that money's not coming in, then they tend to not go into debt.
That's very good to hear.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're overall, we're responsible.
They are. Yeah.
And that's why we can do the line of credit for 2 weeks, 30 days or something, you know, that's not the end of the world. That's the purpose of the product.
Yeah.
Get you over a low cash flow period. Now, because you're relying on your, I don't know, is it like 90 days? If you're relying on your credit line too much, that's a bad sign.
I think so. I think 90 days would be
90 days is a little much, right?
A little much. I mean, we certainly have clients that go way past that. I would tell you is that you should understand, and I'm not selling you on anything. You know,
I asked you.
You know, it's we're 5-star rated, and the only reason I point that the statistic is whenever I talk to clients all the time, they love that they have this ability. I never had a client say, "Oh my God, it's expensive," or "Oh my God, I wish I didn't have this." I have just the opposite. I hear the opposite. It's really valuable. And you know, if we're going to bring it into our discussion, for-profit businesses use lines of credit all of the time. So it's a way for them to manage cash flow.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you think you're a nonprofit and you think that you're unusual, that you have ups and downs in cash flow, well, you're not. Everybody has ups and downs in cash flow.
I'm a one person solo consultancy, and I have a line of credit at my bank.
Yeah.
Because there are months when someone pays slow, or there's nothing due, or you got to get by. Yes. All right. So, so your idea for coming on was things we can learn on the nonprofit side, as I said, from our friends over in for-profit, like strategies during tough times. What's your advice there? Like, these are things that you don't see nonprofits doing that they ought to consider doing? Is that it?
Well, yes. Business-wise? Yes. And listen, other than building 7 companies over the last 30 years, I've been an entrepreneur almost my whole career. I also am lucky enough to work with executive directors all the time. So I know what's going on in nonprofits. I've also served on 2 boards. So I have a little insight as to both sides of the table. Now, sure. Tony, during this talk, I'd like you to really kind of give a little bit more insight as to, I have 10 areas that I think really successful business owners do that I'll share with everybody. And then maybe, because the nonprofits much better than I do, you can just give us your take on it and kind of apply it even more. So, I'm happy to address the crisis. I just actually did a white paper on what to do in a crisis as well. And I'll give you that wasn't on my list, but I'll give you my 2 cents. And the idea behind a crisis is survival. That's not a big deal, but you always want to be able to fight the next day. So you have to really buckle down, cut costs extremely fast. Think the worst is going to come down the tubes and really reduce your cost structure as quickly as you can. I've been through 3 major recessions in the United States, and all my companies that I had during that time, really had to survive. And so I know what it's like. And, it's a little late now. And if you haven't done it, but you unfortunately, you got to really cut costs. And, unfortunately, 65% of all nonprofits' costs go into often payroll. So you unfortunately have to look very closely at that. So
this is saying, you're saying as the crisis emerges.
Yeah, well, we're in crisis mode right now, right?
Well, not as bad as 2008, 2009 or 9/11.
I'm talking about nonprofits. If you're, the government funding, we saw a lot of our clients.
Oh, nonprofits lost impacted money. You're right, by State Department. Right. And USA,
I mean, out of the 12 years I've been doing this, this is the worst time in nonprofits history. In during COVID, the donors stepped up, and then all of the nonprofits got money that they weren't expecting, and people did a really nice job. And now we're seeing not over the government funding stopping, but we're not seeing donors stepping in like they did in COVID.
Yeah, no, I understand. And a lot of that, during COVID was initially nonprofits were very reluctant to ask because they were afraid that, everybody's, we're all staring down our own mortality. Yeah. I mean, at the early stages, we didn't know if a trip to the grocery store, could end up getting, we get a disease and there's no cure for it. There's no vaccine for it yet. Like a trip to the grocery store could be deadly. So nonprofits backed off, but our advice, the advice consistently was you still have needs and you have to share those needs. And people have greater concerns about their own health and mortality and their families today than they did 3 months or maybe even just 3 weeks ago, depending on when we're talking. But you still have needs, and let your donors balance. Give them credit for being able to balance their own now greater concerns and maybe needs with your still continuing ongoing your needs. Give the donors credit.
I think that's
step up.
I agree. Right. I said cut costs, but the second part of that is, but I think this is more obvious to people that you have to be putting everything you can into fundraising, grants, donors, you have to be putting a lot of that into. And that kind of moves us into like the 10 points that I thought I wanted to communicate today to everybody about what really good people do.
Let me just add a little point to what you just said about not cutting fundraising. That's very short-sighted.
It is.
Because that fundraising is your revenue. all the streams you just mentioned, that's your income. And when you cut your income sources, then you may as well cut everything else.
Yeah, so, and the other thing,
you need to be cautious about knee jerk reactions in a crisis.
I think what happens is you should start to really be what's really effective, what's working, and you kind of zero in on those things. And one of the things that during recessions that I learned in this case, recessions we're talking about for businesses, and we're going to be going into a recession if we're not already. And again, let's be clear what a recession is. A recession is a negative GDP for two full quarters. That's the consensus. So negative growth. So of the United States. And so,
you foresee a recession. We don't statistically have one now.
No brainer. We can't tell because statistics aren't coming out.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Right?
We can't. Do we know what the statistics are? But all right, assuming. Right. Well, that
again, it's got to be two full quarters. So it'd be 6 months. You know, we're definitely in a huge slowdown. But I think this is something I'm about to say that's very helpful. I think you want to look at your organization and I did this and say, where do I want to be in 3 years from now? And it allows you to have a sense. Once you're past that initial stage of, oh my God, once you are able to stabilize your nonprofit and you can get to this next phase, the next phase is, what do I want our organization to look like when this gets better? Because it's going to get better. But, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years out, by doing something like that, it galvanizes the purpose of your staff and you. And it gets you out of this negativity and more into a positive. And that really helped me through recessions, I know.
Okay.
But so let me read off the 10 things and then we're going to, then if we can, we circle back. I don't know if we're going to get to all 10 of them. A good business owner. And I'm talking about for a business that's between, there's two types.
Wait,
but
Stephen, just tick them off quickly. Don't go into detail on any of them. And then that'll give us the most time to be able to go back. Go ahead.
You got it.
Read them off.
Works on their business and not in it.
Okay.
They build systems. Number three is they make sure 10% of their business doesn't come from one client. They know their numbers cold. They are not overly optimistic and more and idealistic. They are realistic. They focus relentlessly on customers. They know exactly their perfect client. If we could translate to nonprofits, that would be their perfect donor. What that person would look like. They business owners who are really good at what they do communicate company culture, purpose, goals, and company direction, and they know them inside and out, and their staff knows them inside and out, and they keep learning constantly, and lastly, they manage their cash flow. So those are the 10 I have, and I tried to rank them in order. The first one, which was works on their business, is what I often see with executive directors who are under, their revenue is under 2 million, so to speak, in revenue a year, that usually those executive directors are doing everything. And
they're in the weeds and not in the treetops.
Yep. And you may not be able to get there. The way that you do that is you either delegate to get out of the weeds, or you get to a point where you can hire a second in command. And that, it may not happen to 2 million, but that's the goal, is for you to not be the person who's doing everything at the organization. And by the way, usually it's because you're burning out. Which is very common.
Yes, you're right. You'll feel that.
Yep.
I have a suggestion for transitioning from one state to the next, or one employee to the second or third, to be where you can hire a second or third, and that's using consultants, freelancers.
Agreed.
help you build up some of your capacity, maybe in grants. So then you can hire a grants person full time because you can justify that, or your individual fundraising. Maybe it's events. I'm not keen on events as primary fundraisers. Maybe I should that would be like a footnote. Building up your sustainer base, building up your social media presence so that you have a funnel of folks that you take from, the people who engage with you on Instagram, and you move them, whoever's willing, into donating or volunteering. Volunteering can also be a valuable transition method. So between those two, consultants and using volunteers, those can sort of be a bridge to, you as the sole employee to being able to expand the full-time employees.
Yeah, and I'll also add one to that too that I learned. I had one company, and when we were at 5 million, it wasn't enough for me to hire a second in command. So I gave somebody on my team who I really liked a dual role. Not only did they do the job that they did, but then I asked them to take over a director of staff, and then I paid them an extra $5,000 or $10,000, I forget what it was, because they took on some additional responsibilities, and it allowed me to transition. So, if you're talking about like in this same topic, working on the business, the executive director, or let's just talk about the business owner, they really good business owners typically focus on one or two things that are the most important for the organization. In a business, it's about revenue. It's about how can I drive revenue? And that's where they spend their time. And I think it should be similar in executive director for a nonprofit, where they're really, 95% of their time should be in regards to driving revenue. Unfortunately, what happens is the smaller the nonprofit, oftentimes, the more the executive director is much more comfortable working in the other side, which is how can I help the people in the cause, my cause, and it's more the operations side of it.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to number two. I would like to get some detail on each of the 10. So let's go to your second.
They build systems. So they make sure they have processes and procedures in place. They make sure their employees follow those processes and procedures. They use technology really, really well to make everybody productive. But they don't, they build processes so that, think of it this way, if one of your key people were to leave and you have to have somebody else come in and fill that spot, would they be able to get up to speed super quickly? And there's a reason for why processes are so important, is because it builds a standard in your organization about how things are going to get done. In essence, they replicate the way you would do things. And you're documenting it, and you're making sure, this is the key, you got to follow up to make sure people are following the processes.
What's your third?
This is a big one. Make sure 10% of your business doesn't come from any one client. So often what we see at Financing Solutions, in fact, this is one reason why we will not fund somebody, is because if they're a large percent of their business only comes from one or two, either people or grants. So if I don't know what the magic number is for a nonprofit, but in a business, if more than 10% of your business comes from one area, then that's not a good sign.
When you say one area, you mean one client?
One client.
Not one industry or market,
correct,
or something like that. Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So, yeah. Our listeners are small and mid-sized nonprofits. I mean, it's very possible that more than 10% of fundraising revenue could be coming from either one person or one foundation or one government agency.
It's a big red flag if that's the case. Yeah,
I've heard of substantial amounts of revenue coming from, maybe it's not a single government agency, I mean, if it's different government agencies, then that's a little different. Okay, but if it's a single agency, red flag.
Just to be clear, this happens. So many small business owners who are not, are not that experienced or not very good at what they do, they get like, it happens all the time. They'll get 90% of their clients from one, 90% of their business from one client. That's a big problem. If you lose, then the reason being, of course, the most obvious, yeah. If you lose that client, you're really in trouble. So.
Decentralized, revenue sources need to be decentralized.
Yep.
Look, in your first year or something, a foundation grant. Well, it could be a foundation that funds startup. They'll fund you for the first 2 or 3 years, and then after that, they'll wean you off or they'll just cut you off. And you need to be self-sustaining. So, look, in your first year, you got to take what you can get. If that's a foundation or a large donor. It could be even the funder. It could be the founder funding it, him or herself. Obviously, that's an exception. But you need to get off that. It is dangerous.
Think about if you're $3 million in revenue and, you go to bed at night just hoping that your biggest donor doesn't
$300,000 or more.
Yeah.
$500,000 doesn't just go. One-sixth of your revenue doesn't go out.
Yeah.
Because the donor had a bad year.
Yep. Yep.
Had a fire in their home. Whatever. All right. Enough said.
It's time for Tony's Take 2.
Thank you, Kate. I have another Tales from the Gym. On Halloween week, there was a little preschool parade right through our community gym because the preschool is just across the hall from the gym in the community center. So the kids came through. Interrupted my elliptical workout. How could I keep running on the elliptical when the kids are going by? I had to stop. I had to give them their due. So otherwise I would be an old crotchety, so-and-so. So, no, of course, everybody stopped in the gym. There was about half a dozen of us in the gym. We all clapped. Little preschoolers went by. There were two Supermans. There was a Princess Ariel, a cowboy, and a Cookie Monster, and there was a girl who was the Cookie Monster. So it was all very cute, of course. They just marched through with their little preschool, well, not the adults aren't little, with the preschool leader, and then there was a woman following, and they did a little parade just through the gym, and it was adorable. So great, a fun, every tale from the gym is not a crotchety, curmudgeonly, why is somebody doing this to me type, right? Of course not. Halloween parade was great fun. Loved it. Very adorable. And that is Tony's Take 2. Kate?
Sounding like the Scrooge of Halloween over here.
Well, yeah. I mean, they came through. They're parading through the gym. I'm busy. I have things to do. I don't have time for parades, especially impromptu, unplanned. I'm on the elliptical here. Come on, people, please. No, it was fun. It was fun to see see the little preschoolers walk through. It was very adorable.
We've got Buku, but loads more time. Here's the rest of What We Can Learn from For Profits with Stephen Halasnik.
The next one is they know their numbers cold. They know the key performance indicators, KPIs. They're the things that really matter to their organization. They know them off the top of their heads all the time. So these,
What are some key KPIs?
Well, for a for-profit business, number one would be profit.
Let's do the nonprofit. Can we do the nonprofit side?
Well, you could help me with it, but I would say revenue. Okay.
Profits or revenue, fundraising, revenue of all sources. Yes.
Revenue of all sources.
Could be earned income as well as fundraising.
Number two would be, where your costs all are, what the percentage of your costs are, where they come from. So what percentage of your, are you paying in salary and versus revenue? Let's see. Some of you, maybe the three biggest areas of costs in your organization, I think it would be really, really important. What else would you think, Tony?
Cash on hand.
Cash on hand. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. How many how many months of cash should we have?
I don't know. They say for an individual, they all say,
well, come
six
on,
months.
You started seven businesses and two of them were on the Inc. 500 fastest. You must. What did you look for?
Had a line of credit.
Oh, so you're.
Yeah, I always had a line of credit. But the one area that you should know that nonprofits blow away businesses, for-profit businesses at, is budgeting and forecasting.
Yeah, you have some things where nonprofits do better.
They do.
I was going to get to those after we did five. Then I was going to get to the nonprofits.
This is one.
Say more about that. Yeah.
Well, nonprofits are fantastic at budgeting and forecasting, and also making and following up on it. I don't know. Listen, you got to understand. I know 300, 400, 500 business owners because I'm constantly involved in that circle, and I don't know. I literally do not know one business owner, right? And this is from businesses from 1 million in revenue to 20 million revenue that budget and forecast. I just don't know anybody like that. I've never done it. And I don't know any other business owners who do it. But all the clients that we talk to with, they all budget really, really well. And that's a positive.
Good. Okay. All right. All right. So know your numbers. So, yeah. All right. So we talked about, so you asked me then. Okay. So cash on hand. Not sure. I mean, you might have, especially in the fourth quarter, you might have weekly production goals. You probably have at least biweekly production goals in the fourth quarter, if not weekly production goals. So you're paying attention to those. I like to know, away from the money side, but meaningful contacts. How many meaningful contacts is your individual fundraiser or are your individual fundraisers having in, I don't know, I guess over a month?
Yep.
Meaningful contacts. I mean, a meaningful contact could be just left a phone message. I mean, that can be a meaningful contact. Not call me back. That's not meaningful, but happy birthday, left a phone message, happy birthday. Happy anniversary. It's the anniversary of your very first gift to us. That's always a very meaningful one. Remembering people's donor anniversaries. You gave your first gift to us 8 years ago today. Nobody tracks that. No individual tracks that. Fundraisers who track that. So fundraisers who track that, you can really touch your donors. So I'd say meaningful contacts from your individual fundraisers. That's a metric I'm interested in.
Yeah, and so what my suggestion to everybody who's listening is you should have an Excel spreadsheet, and on that Excel spreadsheet,
take a breath. Hold on.
You should
on
have.
That. Go ahead.
Yeah, you should have your KPIs that you care the most about. I would tell you not to overdo it. And I have a reminder on your calendar, or if you do have someone who's working internally as an accountant or something like that, a bookkeeper, give that to them and say, I want this every single month, or you do it every single month, yourself. And every single month you update that calendar, I'm sorry, that spreadsheet, so that you know your numbers and also so you can see trends. And I would tell you it's very helpful to be able to look back eventually at 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago to see where your numbers trended. And so that's my suggestion.
Okay. Do one more and then we'll go back over to the what nonprofits do better side.
Yep.
Number five. You're on your number five now.
We're on number five. So this is one I got from my business. I have a business partner and he works more on the operations side. So he's dealing with much more documentation requirements to nonprofits and also talks to executive directors even more than I do. And he's the one who gave me this. And he said executive directors are too optimistic and idealistic. When it comes to, so that's what the, you know, that's one that he kind of wanted to put that down.
Over optimistic and over idealistic?
Yes.
Okay. Can you channel your co-founder and say a little more about, I mean,
yes,
to be generally an upbeat class of people, I think.
Well, he said overly. So I think more experienced business owners know to not grow too fast until they have their model down. And they really minimize making mistakes when they're too small. The whole idea is to build a runway. It typically, as a small business owner, it takes you 3 to 5 years to really understand your business and the marketplace you're in. And you want to be able to, I used to have a great business mentor. I had him for 25 years. And he said, the longer you stay in business, the more chances is that you're going to figure everything out. And that is kind of what your goal should be, to grow not too fast until you really figure out, you really have your model down.
Let's move over to the nonprofits do it better side. So budgeting, tick off. Yep. What else? One other that we do better.
Nonprofits have a built-in purpose that really galvanizes the team.
The mission. The mission.
Yeah, the mission. And really, for-profits have to, good ones, have to work on understanding what their true mission is, so that and make sure that they have buy-in from the people who work for them. Really good experienced business owners know what their culture is, know what their mission is, know what their goals are. From what I've seen is nonprofits have the purpose built in, and that really allows you to have a energy in the nonprofit with your employees that is hard to duplicate.
So over on the business side, you all or some folks need to be more, you know, I mean, you're talking about essentially like culture, and that's going to start from the top, that the CEO of the business is clear about the values, the culture, the spirit of the organization. What, you know, I hope that it's more than just profit. We got to maximize profit. That's such a shallow, I don't know, but you know, I work on the nonprofit side, but to me, that's such a shallow pursuit.
I don't know.
That's why we're here, to maximize profit.
I don't know any good business owners.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't know any business owners who do that. I don't know one. They are all there. You know, going on this podcast, talking about, you know, for profits versus nonprofits, It's a little scary for me because nonprofits.
This is safe space. It's safe space here.
Yeah. And that's why I'm asking you for advice. But people who are in the nonprofit sector often don't look favorably upon for-profit businesses. Mm. But when you're in a for-profit business, the hardest decision. I think people are going to be surprised to hear this. The hardest decision that a business owner has to make is to lay off people. It's the hardest decision that you make. And I think most people who are not in a for-profit business are surprised to hear that. I know that gives all the people I know angst when that something like that has to happen. For-profit businesses want to have a purpose and a mission and a culture, and really good executive director, I'm sorry, really good business owners get to that really, really early. And the reason why I put this down is that I'm a big believer in building culture, purpose, mission, and goals really, really, really early.
Early, yeah. Yeah.
I did that before I started the companies.
Okay.
You know, so.
Let's go back to your number six, because I don't want to shortchange nonprofit radio listeners. So your number six for what we can learn better.
Now, I'm going to relate it back to nonprofits after I say this, but really, really good companies focus relentlessly on customers. And I think when you look at customers for nonprofits, I think the area is your customer. You have two. You have your cause, the people that, you know, maybe let's use the word your clients, who are you're doing your services for, maybe, and you know, everybody's different. But I, you know, you're in the other side is your donors, you know, focusing relentlessly on the donors who are donating money to your cause. And that's what for-profit businesses do really well. And it's something for you to consider if you're running a nonprofit.
And the only thing I would add is volunteers.
Yeah, so
certainly,
I agree.
You're right. The people who are benefiting, the people who are doing, getting the benefit of your work, or the animals, or, you know, relentless focus on them. Also, your donors, and I would add volunteers.
I agree. Agreed. Next one, number seven, is knowing exactly their perfect client. That's what for-profits do really well. And the reason for this is in a for-profit business, this is for marketing, so that you know where to put the money and where you want to put your effort into getting clients that really can use your services. And if you translated this to a nonprofit, I think where this could be used is, do you know what your perfect donor looks like, or your volunteer looks like? Do you know where to find them? Do you know how much money it costs you to get them? Do you like why, you know, your perfect client? And the way you analyze this is you look at the people who are giving you money now, and you say, hey, you know, how did they find us, and what do they care about, and what resonates with them, and why did they give to us, and where else do they hang out? You know, it's the client model, and that allows you to focus your energy very efficiently and effectively, because if you don't have a lead generation system to get donors or clients to you, then you're really spinning your wheels a lot.
On the business side, is it called your ideal client profile? Is that something, or ICP?
It is.
Do I have it right? Is that
it is.
That's acronym? ICP?
Okay. Yep.
Okay. I'm surprised I got the right. Okay.
Yep. By the way, that's like the end of the business that I'm really good at. I spend a lot of time. I spend 95% of my time in the understanding of that, and where do we find our clients. I don't go out and do it. I just work on the model of that to really understand it.
What's your number eight?
Experienced owners for businesses we talked about it already, but they communicate company culture, purpose, goals, and company direction. And they really stay laser focused on those. And they're always talking about it, and they're always making sure that that the company is doing it, and that their staff knows what the company culture, purpose, goals, and company direction is. So what I used to do, what I do at my company and the ones in the past, is whenever we have a meeting, I make sure I review those things, and I ask the staff, are we living up to this? You know, and really, really good business owners make sure they stay true to that.
You do that in every single meeting?
I do it in every monthly meeting that we have as a team. That's correct.
Okay. And people don't roll their eyes.
No, because if you get...
Oh, here he goes again. Oh, no, God, with the culture again, I got to hear this.
Well, I'll tell you if someone, like, if I would be paying attention to that, but I wouldn't be, when I go into meetings, I don't lecture. I ask questions. No,
I think as long as it's being lived, then it's not eye rolling. I mean, as long as they're witnessing it in between the monthly meetings, they're seeing the company live up to it in just day-to-day, you know, just day-to-day decision making, then it's true that the company is in fact grounded in these values and this direction and these goals, right? I mean, it has to be lived in between the meetings.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, all you need to say is, you know, this is our company culture, our purpose, our goals, and our, well, don't go over goals yet, but that's too big deal. But here's our company culture, our purpose, and our direction. Over the last 30 days, did you see any instances where we didn't live up to what we're trying to do? You know, that doesn't dictate, that asks. And I'm not an intimidating person. I mean, but the people who have worked with me, they feel like they're part of the company, that it's not my company, that they're a part of it. I'm a big believer in buy-in. And the only way I'm going to get buy-in is if they really believe in this stuff.
Right, right. That's essential. That's essential culture. Mm-hmm. And they'll believe in it if they see it in practice. What's your number nine?
Good business owners are continuously learning. They're just constantly learning. And, you know, this goes back to, and I think they're not just learning as a company. I'm sorry, they're not just learning as a person, but they're helping people in their company learn. They create a learning atmosphere. And it's constantly, you know, how can we be better at what we do? How can we be better for our customers? And the business owner is always reading, learning, asking questions, really, really good. The best business owners that I know. In fact, I just spoke to one of my friends who's a fantastic business owner, and he's just such a he just is always a benchmarking, you know, learning from other companies, even in his own sector. Mm-hmm. So I think in nonprofits is, you know, I one of the things how you can translate this is also, you know, do you have a group of people that are other nonprofit executive directors that you talk to?
That's very valuable, right? Having a peer group.
Definitely.
Because when you're in the leadership, it can be lonely at the top.
Very lonely. Yep.
People have agendas. You're not sure who to trust 100%, you know. So having someone who's objective about your business, and nonprofits are a business. They just happen to be incorporated as a not-for-profit corporation, but they should be run as businesses. Someone who's objective about your business, who doesn't have a stake in the outcome or your decision, can be a very valuable, right, peer supporter, mentor, call them whatever you like, friend. Friends are good. We like having friends. You know, friends we can bounce things off. So, yeah. Thank you.
And what's different with this guy I talked to yesterday, his name's Dwight, is he and I actually had a company, he had his own, I had mine, that we were both competitors. Mm. And that's, you know, most people think, oh, well, if you're competitors, you don't talk. Well, Dwight and I talked all the time. And, you know, his company was at the time was 90 million. My company was 11 million. We were in a $13 billion industry. So we were both small potatoes. And we both knew that it didn't matter. We weren't going to cannibalize each other's business. We were going to help each other's business. That's so good. Look at it that way.
And your final
one is self-serving, but
now I want to leave a little time to go back to nonprofits do it better side. So don't go too long on number 10, because I want to end with that. Go ahead. Yep. What's your number 10?
They have a plan to manage cash flow. And that is, right, you know, there's going to be ups and downs, and either, you know, they have a certain amount of money that they figured they put aside. Again, you guys, nonprofits are better at budgeting, you know, or you have a donor who will always step up to help you when things are, when, when your cash flow is down, or you have a line of credit in place, or but you have a plan. You have a plan that handles when there's ups and downs in cash flow.
You mentioned something about donors, having trusted close donors. They might be board members, maybe they're not board members, but trusted donors who you know you can go to when there is a crisis.
Yep.
You know, they're investors. They love your work. They know your outcomes. They respect the CEO. You don't come to them on a knee jerk, but you know, something happened. Maybe you had a catastrophe of whatever sort imaginable. And these are the folks you can go to and say, you know, can you help? Can you step up? Help us in this crisis moment.
Yeah, the problem that I've seen is that that's sometimes okay once, maybe twice. But when you have to go back to that person over and over again.
Yeah, well, that's kind of becoming the knee jerk. Right?
It's a little embarrassing.
That's like having you relying on your line of credit for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It is, right. Then they're going to start to question the leadership.
Yeah.
Like, why do you have so many crises? Okay. Let's go back to the nonprofit to do a better side and wrap up. Give us a third one that you all on the commercials, corporate, well, we're all corporations. You all over on the for-profit side can learn from us.
Yeah.
You don't have a third one, do you?
I really don't have a third one.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd be like shooting in the dark. I think, you know, I think employees want to stay with your organization longer. You know, they care more, so they tend to be happy. But, you know, the problem actually, I just wrote a paper about this today, which was about your staff needs still to be compensated fairly as well. And a lot of nonprofits think, well, you're here for the cause and I don't need to pay you as much.
Yeah, that's bad thinking. Yeah.
It's not really great.
What about something around passion? I mean, I'm sure business people are passionate, but keeping the passion, it's related to what you said, mission, you know, like mission alignment, keeping that passion burning in, you know, I use animals as an example a lot. I'm not sure why, but it's clean water, you know, just reminding folks every day, not literally, reminding folks routinely that we're here for drinking water for children.
Yeah.
For the infirm, for those of us who are healthy every day, we all need clean water. And, you know, and sort of keeping that passion alive. I don't know. You're on the business side. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm stereotyping business people, but I wonder if the early on passion, does it stay? Does it stay 5-10 years? The passion for why you built that business, because that's what I'm advocating. Keeping that passion burning in yourself and on your team.
I'll answer it indirectly, and I think that the burnout at nonprofits for executive directors is significantly higher than it is for business owners of businesses. So it's interesting you should say that, because the built-in purpose you would think would lend itself to not burning out as much, but maybe it's because the nonprofits have to fight so hard to get funding, and it's such a much more difficult, I think, issue than it is for a for-profit business to succeed. I don't know statistically if nonprofits fail higher than for-profit businesses, but the burnout syndrome in a nonprofit is much higher. And I often say, remember that this is a marathon and not a sprint. And you need to be, nonprofit owners and business owners need to remember that you need to take care of yourself first, because you're no good to your employees. You're no good to your customers. You're no good to your cause if you're burnt out.
Perfect. Self-care, absolutely. Leave Self-care. It there.
That comes first.
That should have been your number one.
All right. Is that?
Stephen Halasnik. You'll find the company at financingsolutionsnow.com. Thanks very much, my fellow Jersey boy. Thank you very much for sharing.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
I'm glad.
Next week, another conversation with Art Taylor, the CEO of AFP. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.